Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and it is great to be with you. Really, I'm feeling great today, and I hope that you are too, as 2011 winds down here on December 1st, 30 days to go till the end of the year. And what an interesting year it has been, the year 2011, and I'm sure what an interesting year 2012 is going to be. I hope that you are doing well. I haven't been in for a few weeks. I want to thank Otis McClay for sitting in during Thanksgiving. That allowed me to go be with my family on Thanksgiving, and that was great. Got a great show today for you. Going to be talking about banking. Bankers, the purpose of banking, the purpose of bankers. There's a lot of talk, people are talking a lot about banking and bankers, and I thought we would kind of maybe talk about it too, since this is the New Capital Show. The phone number here, we'll be taking your calls later, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT is the number to call. On the web, you can find me at newcapitalshow.com and on Facebook at newcapitalshow.leogold. I think that's right. I always get mixed up 12. Maybe it's leogold.newcapitalshow.
I'll check it for you.
Yeah, you check it. I think it's leogold.newcapital. Anyway, search me on Facebook, and I'll be happy to friend you back. I had a great day yesterday. I picked my daughter up from something. She's six. In the middle of the day, and was going to take her to school. I was going to take her to lunch and then take her back to school, and we ended up going to the zoo. I'm not big on zoos. I'm not big on looking at caged animals, and I think that zoos are probably doing a better job now of providing proper habitat for animals than certainly in the past. And I think they're doing a pretty good job over at the Houston Zoo. I just decided we're going to go to the zoo. It was a beautiful day. I took the afternoon off. I didn't return her to school, and I spent some just great quality time with my daughter. And unfortunately, of course, so many of the animals that you see at the zoo these days on the plaque that describes the name of the animal and what its traits are, these days will tell you also what its endangered status is. And I had to keep explaining to my six-year-old that this animal is endangered and what's threatened mean. And I thought, my gosh, what kind of world are we in now where I'm describing to my six-year-old, here is this animal, and what does it mean that it's endangered? Very, very difficult to do that. And yet it has to be done, hopefully, in describing to my six-year-old daughter. Hopefully she'll take some steps to help change the world, and that's what I think many of us are trying to do right now, is to change the world. She wanted to go on the carousel, and we did, and I can't tell you how nice the man, his name was Henry, we didn't have tickets, and he let us get on the carousel before we bought the tickets. He trusted us to ride the carousel and then go get our tickets afterwards, and he was a gentleman. He was happy. He made the announcement of when the carousel was going to start and, you know, get your legs and arms in and the bell's going to ring. And there was something about this guy. He was absolutely just a gem. And there we were on Wednesday. The zoo was not crowded at all, having a great time. I told Henry, I said, you know, you must have one of the most important jobs in the city of Houston. You bring happiness. And you see such happiness. Who is not happy on a carousel? And this man, Henry, who runs the carousel at the zoo, this is what he does every single day. He's entrusted to run it safely and to bring happiness. And he sees the joy on the faces of small children and their parents alike, because for whatever reason, one of the great things as a parent is, and that makes you smile, is when you see your young child on a carousel. And so I told Henry as we were leaving, I said, Henry, you, you must have one of the most important jobs in the city of Houston. You must bring more smiles and more happiness to more people than any other job. And that brings me, of course, to bankers, right? To bankers. And so now is, of course, it's the new Capital show, so we can't talk about carousels for the whole hour. But don't think that carousels aren't important. Brings us to bankers. And why Henry brings such joy, Henry, the man who runs the carousel at the Houston Zoo, and people, on the other hand, are so angry these days with bankers. And when I talk about bankers, I want to use, and I want you to use the term very broadly for the purpose of today's discussion. I don't want you to think about just commercial bankers, or maybe you're thinking about investment bankers, or you're thinking about guys who are really traders. When I say bankers, I really want you to think about financial intermediaries in a very broad way, because that's what a banker is. There are different kinds of bankers, of course. There are commercial bankers. Commercial banks take deposits from depositors, build up these deposits, and then loan those deposits out to businesses or to individuals or for home purchases. There are investment banks that generally don't take deposits, don't have, at least in the past, huge pools of capital. What they do is they link up pools of capital with investments, projects that need capital. And so those are, of course, the two major types of bankers. There are merchant bankers. There are mortgage bankers, right? There are investment managers, mutual fund managers, who in some sense are a form of banker. But in general, what we're talking about is the world of finance. When we're talking about bankers, we're talking about financial intermediaries. That's a key word, intermediary. Bankers, intermediaries, sit in between two elements. That is their job. When you talk about a banker, you're talking about an intermediary. Someone in a position that is intermediate between point A and point B. And what is the point A and point B that bankers, intermediaries, sit between? Because that is the function of banking. And this gets to why people are unhappy. And maybe people should be unhappy, maybe they shouldn't. You know, so I'm asking you, what are these two elements between which financial intermediaries, bankers, sit? It's the whole reason we have banks and bankers. Well, banks and bankers and financial intermediaries sit between people who have money, extra money, otherwise known as savers. You are a saver if you have an amount of money saved up in excess of what your needs are. You've got more money than you have needs. You're a saver. Right? And so on one side of the intermediary banking relationship sits a saver, someone with excess capital, capital that needs to be put to work. Right? If it doesn't get put to work, then what? It just sits there. It's wasted capital. And on the other side of the banking intermediary, the financial intermediary, sits what? A project. And that project can be a new business. It can be a borrower, right? But it's someone or something that has more need than capital, right? So both of these entities are the exact mirror opposite of the other. The saver on one side, the pool of capital on one side, those are the same, the saver and the pool of capital, have money more than they have need. And the project or the borrower on the other side has more need than it has money. You got it? So what do you think the role of the banker or the financial intermediary is? It's to play matchmaker, as it were. A banker is a matchmaker. A bank is a matchmaking organization. And it is to match up the side that has more money than need with the side that has more need than money. That's it. And you're saying to yourself, oh, how could it be that simple? How could it be that simple? We're talking about derivatives and we're talking about credit default swaps and mortgage meltdowns. And no. Stop. It's very simple. Banking is about matching up entities that have more money than need with entities that have more need than money. Now, that is a very important position in our society, I think you could conclude. Right? Think about how important that role is. The matching of entities that have more money than need with entities that have more need than money. What could be more important than that intermediary function that bankers and other financial intermediaries serve? Right? As I was talking about earlier, the importance of Henry the Carousel Master. What an important job that is, and the incredible happiness that he brings. And in many ways, everything that we do, all of us who work, are in some sense bankers. Henry's job was to match up children who want to get on a carousel with the carousel. And his job is to match those resources safely and properly. And I'm telling you, yesterday, this man did his job. If everybody did their job the way Henry, the carousel master at the zoo, does it, we wouldn't have problems. But that hasn't been the case. So the banking operation is critical. Nicholas Kristof in today's New York Times, the headline of his op-ed is "A Banker Speaks with Regret." He says, if you want to understand why the Occupy movement has found such traction, it helps to listen to a former banker like James Thexton. He fully acknowledges that he and other bankers are mostly responsible for the country's housing mess. As a regional vice president for Chase Home Finance in southern Florida, Thexton shoveled money at home borrowers. Do you hear that sentence? He shoveled money at home borrowers. So now that you have in your head the description that I've given you of the banking function as it's properly understood, matching those who have money more than need with those who have need more than money, you have to ask, is shoveling money at a particular group befitting of that function? Back to the article. In 2007, his team, Mr. Thexton's team, wrote $2 billion in mortgages, he says. Sometimes there were, quote, no documentation mortgages. On the application, you don't put down a job, you don't show income, you don't show assets, he said, but you still got a nod. If you had some old bag lady walking down the street and she had a decent credit score, she got a loan, he added. Thexton says that borrowers made harebrained decisions and exaggerated their resources, but that bankers were far more culpable, and that all this was driven by pressure from the top. You've got somebody making $20,000 buying a $500,000 home, thinking they would flip it, he said. That was crazy, but the banks put programs together to make those kinds of loans. The bigwigs of the corporations knew this, but they figured, we're going to make billions out of it, so who cares? The government is going to bail us out, and the problem loans will be out of here, maybe even overseas. Which, in fact, they were overseas. Many of them. One memory particularly troubles Thexton. He says that some account executives earned a commission 7 times higher from subprime loans rather than prime mortgages. So they looked for less savvy borrowers, those with less education, without previous mortgage experience, or without fluent English, and nudged them towards subprime loans. These less savvy borrowers were disproportionately blacks and Latinos, he said, and they ended up paying a higher rate so that they were more likely to lose their homes. Senior executives seemed aware of this racial mismatch, he recalled, and frantically tried to cover it up. And so on. Now, as I was saying earlier, the role of banker, of banking, of financial intermediaries is a critical function. I hope that you will now agree, now that you understand my description of it. If you are going to be accorded the privilege and the right, and to be placed by society in a position of helping to move capital from people who have it more than they have need to those who have need more than they have capital, then it's important that you be honest, that you be sober, that you be able to make accurate assessments. It's an incredibly powerful position. And I think much of the Occupy movement isn't just about bankers got rich, bankers got bailed out. But it's a fundamental reflection of a feeling and a belief that bankers have been derelict in their duty and may not even understand in the modern United States what their duty is. May not understand the sanctified position that people who become financial intermediaries, the sanctified position that that really entails and results in. Moving the capital of our society from those with it to those who need it. Think about what we count on a banker to do. To think about this project that needs it. And when I say need, that can be a fast-growing young business. It can be someone who wants to purchase a home. It can be someone who wants to get an education. It can be a mature business that's reorganizing its finances. It can be our own government that's raising capital to finance its operations. Many, many different needs. And we count on bankers to match up those with capital with the needs. So I think that much of the Occupy movement is a reflection of the belief of people that bankers have simply not fulfilled that basic function. The basic function that we count on bankers and financial intermediaries critically to fulfill in our society. They're, of course, not the only people to blame. We can blame ourselves to some degree. We can blame the priorities that we've set in our own society. Right? We bear responsibility, too, for some of the decisions that we make. Look at what some of the decisions we've made on a macro level have been. We have housing stock that is massive in number, massive in size. Why would we ever want to build homes that are bigger than people need? That makes no sense from a societal economic standpoint. Think of all the money that goes into homes that are too big or too energy inefficient. That's a waste of capital. And once it's built into a home, you can't get it out. What are you going to do, cut off the bathroom and sell it if you need some, take some money out of the house? Constructed housing capital is incredibly illiquid and inflexible. And yet, we've gone through a housing boom in number of homes and size of homes. Much of it inefficient from an energy standpoint. We've built transportation systems, especially freeways and roads, and we've designed them so that nobody has to sit in traffic during rush hour in the morning and the evening. And the rest of the time, the freeways are, you know, eight lanes of unused capacity. Again, very expensive. Rather than building public transportation, we've gone this other route. We've even built enormous militaries in this country. Plural, with multiple branches, navies and air forces and armies over the last decades. We have moved capital from savers into the construction of huge militaries for the purpose of doing what? Invading basically tiny countries. Right? I mean, all this should sound like it's cut from the same cloth. Homes that are too big, freeways that are too wide, militaries that are too big. And behind all of this has been a set of financial intermediaries who have facilitated the movement of capital from people who have the money more than they have the need, and they have moved it to people and projects that have had needs more than they've had the money. And here in 2011, there are a lot of people standing up and saying, well, I think the bankers and the intermediaries and society as a whole has basically gotten it wrong. We have shoveled, in the words of the Chase banker, shoveled money. Shoveled it, literally. That is his word. We have shoveled it, seemingly at the wrong projects. I read this the other day. This is a report. 75% recycling rate would create 1.5 million jobs in this country. This is from Waste and Recycling News. I know you all read that, right? You all get Waste and Recycling News? You don't? You're kidding. You should. November 14th, nearly 1.5 million more jobs would be created if the national recycling rate reached 75%. You want jobs? What do we have? 6 million, 7, 8 million, 10 million people who need work? More jobs, less pollution, growing the recycling economy in the U.S. Released by TELUS Institute and Sound Resource Management. These are Boston-based think tanks. Also said that the higher recycling rate would mean reduced pollution and improved public health, along with generating strong local economies with stable employment bases. While the vast majority of municipal solid waste can be readily recycled, reused, or composted, only 33% is currently diverted from disposal, according to the report. Most of our discards are still sent to landfills and incinerators. According to the report, not only would reaching a 75% national recycling rate create nearly 1.5 million more jobs, than in 2008, but it also would reduce CO2 emissions by 276 million metric tons by 2030. That is equivalent to 72 coal-fired power plants or taking 50 million cars off the road, the report said. Here is 2011 comes to a close, a year in which we see financial, well, let's call it chaos in Europe. I don't know if it's exactly chaos, but it's pretty close to it. We see Occupy movements here in the United States. People are asking, why are the bankers, and again, I use that broadly, why are bankers and society as a whole, why are we not moving capital from people who have it more than they have need to such obvious needs? 1.5 million jobs by increasing the recycling rate to 75%. I had lunch with the head of solid waste here in Houston a few weeks ago, Harry Hayes. Harry's a friend. But I got to tell you, the city of Houston is in not a real big hurry to increase its recycling rate right now. They're doing a few things. There's a request for proposal that has gone out to some vendors. We'll see what happens. But right now, we have a lot of people in this country who have decided that it is not possible or prudent to even ask for the movement of capital from those who have capital beyond their need to those who need capital beyond what they have. It's my hope that in 2012 that will change. I think it is changing, but it needs to change much more. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your call. 713-526-5738 is the number here. 713-526-KPFT. This is the new Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host, and we'll be back in just a moment.
For 30 years, step by step, debate by debate, America's public officials have rewritten the rules of American politics and the American economy in ways that have benefited the few at the expense of the many. This is politically engineered inequality.
That was Bill Moyers, journalist, author, and TV host, speaking in Houston on November 17th at the Wortham Center. I'm Wally James, host of the Progressive Forum, and we'll be playing that talk in its entirety this Thursday night. We also have an interview with Michael Ratner, co-author of the new book, Hell No, Your Right to Dissent in 21st Century America. That's Bill Moyers and Michael Ratner on the Progressive Forum this Thursday, December 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m. on KPFT Houston.
Welcome back. I hope that you will tune into Progressive Forum this evening. I was there at Bill Moyers' speech made at the Wortham Theater a couple weeks ago, and it truly was an event. I was amazed at the power of the speech. It's not that I agreed with all of it, but I agreed with the vast majority of it. And I think that if you have some time this evening to tune in to Wally James's fantastic show, Progressive Forum, this evening, then you will be well rewarded for taking the time to listen to Bill Moyers' remarks. They were generous in their spirit, and they were generous in their length. He went on and really describes, I think, in great, great comprehension, the things that have happened in our country and the things that we need to do, the things that concern him. Of course, Bill Moyers, the great journalist here in this country. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Lines are starting to fill up. We've still got some room if you want to get in. This, of course, is the time of year when consumerism runs rampant. And you know, the other day we saw the stock market go up a lot. I guess it was Monday, on reports over the weekend that people went shopping for stuff. People went shopping for stuff. And, you know, the markets were giddy and people's 401ks stabilized after what's been a fairly rough few weeks for market values. And everybody starts, the whole consumer, you know, going to buy stuff. And we should all just stop and think, is this really the economy that we want to build? When I've just read you a report that 1.5 million jobs could be created by raising the recycling rate in the country to 75%, where we are recycling not one-third of our stuff, which is the case now, but three-quarters of it. I say, hell, why not take it to 100%? Now, how many jobs, I ask you, are going to be created by people buying more, what, iPads and barbecue grills? You know where those jobs are going to get made anyway, right? You know where those jobs are going to go. The more that people line up in queue at Black Friday sales and Amazon.com. And look, no offense to those businesses. I got to buy stuff too every so often, and I like getting new stuff like the next guy. But the question is, are we going to gear our entire economy, which currently stands at 70% of gross domestic product, geared toward the consumer sector, when we have the opportunity to create 1.5 million jobs just by raising our recycling rate? Anyway, let's go to the phone, 713-526-5738, as I move my creaky microphone out of my way. Is it Cooey or Cooey?
Hello.
Yeah, tell me your name. Is it Cooey?
Oh, my good friend, I've forgotten my name. Oh,
okay, Cooey. Oh, hey, Cooey. Hey, Cooey. It says, hey, Cooey, it says K-U-W-I. So I was like, Cooey, who's Cooey? But I know Cooey. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Leo. I just called to thank you for your show because
I miss you. Yeah, go ahead.
I have learned from you more than I've learned from anybody. I mean, talking about finances and business and all this, and I listen to you all the time. I've just been a little bit silent, but I tell you what you teach and what you do on the show, I wish people do understand the importance of your show.
Well, thank you, Cooey. Tell me, are you still in car sales?
Yes, I'm selling Lexus now.
Okay. Well, tell me how car sales are.
Well, I tell you, Lexus is doing very, very well.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
And Lexus is Toyota, right?
Yes. Lexus is the higher end of Toyota. And we are doing pretty, pretty well. It's amazing. Because I think the fact is that the cars are very good. And anybody who has owned Lexus before will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what is going, making Lexus, Toyota do very well. So,
and of course, Toyota, you know, I really am grateful for the energy efficient work they've done. I mean, the Toyota Prius, I know it's not a Lexus, but it's still Toyota. I'm assuming that some of that technology is making its way into Lexus cars these days. Is that right or
precisely.
Wrong?
Precisely. Yes, it's true. That's very true.
Yeah. Do they have a hybrid Lexus?
Oh, yes. We got some coming out this year. And
okay, well, look, I want you to... What's your favorite Lexus hybrid that you like?
I think I like the H102, which is very small.
Uh-huh.
And it takes very little gas.
Little gas.
You know?
Yeah.
And even before the engine starts to work... You can move the car even before the engine starts to work.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very good one.
Well, I hope you're selling a lot of them.
Well, I'm doing pretty good. We're talking about finances, and I urge people to listen to your show because during the time I was there with you, my business was going very, very bad. Financial flow was very low. And so how could I keep my focus on my business and when I'm not happy, and then do the show at the same time? So I thought it was a very good thing for me to do and productive for KPFT to move on. And when I stepped back and let somebody took my place, because I wasn't happy at that time. But I tell you what, at this time, I think listening to you and putting all my doing a lot of different things has helped me a lot. And I want to come back.
Cooey, it's great to talk to you. And I hope to see you soon. Take care. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Yes, sir.
713-526-5738. Today we're talking about banking. financial intermediating, moving capital from those who have capital to projects. And is that happening in our country to the degree that it needs to happen? Do we have the right people doing it? Do we need different people doing it? Should the government be doing it? Should you be doing it? These are questions. As I tried to get everyone to understand today, being in a position to move capital from entity A to entity B is an incredibly powerful position. It's a privileged position. And the people serving in those positions should do it with honor. And probably many do. But when you read articles about bankers shoveling willy-nilly money without thought, without analysis, it makes you wonder. Next up is Lydney. Lydney, welcome.
Hi there. Just a couple of questions. Did you know about the secret Fed loans gave banks $13 billion in 2008?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead. Talk about that, Lydney. Talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's so that everyone didn't run crazy and take their money out of their banks. They had to take these secret loans to keep them soluble, right?
Yeah, and what you're referring to is back in 2008, especially in December, as the financial position of banks was so precarious, the Federal Reserve loaned an amount of money that is beyond staggering, almost $8 trillion. I am not kidding you. That's the number. The number is that the Federal Reserve loaned $8 trillion. Now, some people, many would say, it's the Federal Reserve's finest moment. The finest moment of the Federal Reserve to get money into the hands of banks to stave off absolute disaster. The banks went on to earn, the estimates are, according to the Bloomberg article, about $13 billion in profits from loaning out that money or doing whatever they did with the money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not really prepared to criticize the Federal Reserve. All I'm going to say is that whether you are a central banker, you are moving money into the hands of other financial intermediaries, in this case, the member banks of the Federal Reserve, banks like Chase. You and the Federal Reserve, you have an obligation as well to understand whether you are moving capital into the hands of responsible bankers. And that's a question we have to be asking about our system. And this is another reason why I talked about earlier in the show, Henry, the carousel master, Lydney. Some of you may still be wondering, why did I bring that up? Well, that's where the rubber meets the road in our society, is between interactions between people, right? The interaction that I and my daughter had with the carousel master at the zoo yesterday, that's where things happen. And that's where things happen in the rest of the economy as well. When people go in for a loan from a banker, that's where the action happens. It doesn't happen at the level of the Federal Reserve. So we can criticize the Federal Reserve for moving $8 trillion in emergency cash into the banks.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the banks have to have bankers who are honest and trustworthy and discerning enough to know when a loan should be made, how it should be made. And I would go so far as to say our bankers have to have a vision of the future about where capital needs to go to build our society. And unfortunately, so many of our bankers are just reactionaries. You know, it's like, oh, we make a lot of home loans, so let's just keep making more home loans. And that's exactly what we got. Why aren't any of them sitting up there and saying, wait a minute, we can raise a million and a half jobs by raising our recycling rate. Now, how many bankers here in the city of Houston do you think today are thinking about recycling?
Well, not too many. I mean, they're kind of old school in the sense that they want to continue to making the money the way they make money without trying to, you know, seek new adventures.
Well, bankers by their very nature are risk averse, and we need risk averse bankers to some degree, but we also need to make sure that bankers are also willing to seek return as well.
One last question. Do you think many more heads will roll as the FBI investigates and Attorney General of New York continues to investigate?
Well, I hope heads don't roll. I'm never in favor of the guillotine, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And my answer is I don't know. I, you know, I'm not an attorney on the inside of investigations in New York, so I don't have any idea. I do think that it's accurate to say that the ramifications and the reverberations from our financial crisis will be ongoing, and that's not a bad thing. Okay,
yeah.
Lidney, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
One last thing about the recycling.
Yeah.
I'm driving back from Waco over 2 weekends ago, and they're planning to build a big landfill off Highway 6, signs everywhere saying stop it, stop it. And then I speak to my friend last night over in Shady Acres, just up by the Heights, and he has one of those little green recycle bins.
Yeah.
And it overflows.
Oh, I know. Lidney, I'm working on it. It's my main goal for the next year. Great to have you. I'm hoping that we are going to have a modern single-stream recycling system in the city of Houston over the next year. And I'm going to need your help to do it, because you and I together are going to publicly put pressure on the city of Houston, including the mayor's office, including the solid waste division, and including the city council. We are going to bring the full pressure of KPFT listeners and friends of KPFT listeners to bear. And we're going to get it done. We're not going to tolerate this problem. We know we can create jobs, and we're going to make it happen in that way. Bruce is up next. Hey, Bruce, welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
On the recycling, assuming that there are other countries or even other states or cities that have achieved a much higher recycling rate, how are they doing it? Have you looked at how are they doing it? And what I mean by that is, on the spectrum of authoritarianism to just appealing to good people's good nature, how are they doing it? Are they being coercive? Are they just nagging people to death?
It's a great question, Bruce, that you ask. It's great. And there are lots of different models out there now that have been developed in this country. There's a thing called Recycle Bank that gives frequent recycling points. So some cities weigh your recycling, and the more that's in your recycling bin rather than in your trash bin, the more, you know, frequent recycling points you get. So I think you and I would both agree that's a positive inducement, right?
Uh-huh.
Other cities may have fines if you put the wrong recycling in, so that may work for that kind of city. But the bottom line is that there are different ways to go about it in different models.
What about other countries like Germany and the Baltic countries and places like that?
Yeah, I just don't know. It's a great question. I don't know what they're doing in Germany, but I agree with you that there should be a system that fits the local culture, but I am convinced that there is a system to fit us here in Houston. Doyle, you've got something. Doyle wants to chime in, Bruce.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been to Wimberley, Texas, but my dad lives there. And
beautiful city.
The system they have there is 100% participation. And do you know why?
Tell us.
It's because there's no option other than to do it, because you put all of your stuff into one can and somehow they sort it for you. And so there's no option of participation.
You just mean garbage with recycling?
Yes, it's all mixed in and they sort it.
So there you go. So, Bruce, there's Wimberley. And probably that's a more expensive system, I'm just guessing, to have to...
The reason I mentioned Germany is because I went there once, and it seemed like the best organized place on earth.
Yeah.
The whole country was so immaculate and so well-run, it felt like a giant theme park.
Yeah. Bruce, great to have you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the question. You're right. There are different models, but there's one that fits us here in Houston. We need to get to it. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
All right. 713-526-5738. It's the New Capital Show. About 15 minutes left. Mark is next up. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Your show.
Thank you.
You kind of threw out a question there. Should someone else be doing it?
Yeah.
I don't have an answer, but I just want to comment on that I wish someone would. And the reason why I say that is in 2008, 2009, we bailed out all these big banks, and what do? They throw that money back into Wall Street. I don't know if you remember a couple years back, but actually it wasn't even 2 years ago, but the oil futures had traded back and forth like 50 times in one day purely for paper profits.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as these big banks are so concentrated on this excessive profits, excessive bonuses, it's never going to filter down to the economy. I really like the model of credit unions. Now, I know they don't have a lot of money for a lot of things, but for cars, there are also some credit unions that do mortgages. And as far as I know, not one single credit union got any bailout money from all this fallout.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, you know, a credit union is a financial intermediary like a bank. It's a nonprofit generally. It has a nonprofit charter. Many banks have for-profit charters. Your question is the right one. You know, I don't know if any bankers are listening. It's a huge, huge sector. It's an important sector. And I think our bankers should be thinking about, are we as an industry properly moving capital to where it needs to move? And,
well, I don't
and
think they're interested in the rest of us. I think they're only interested in their own profit motive.
Could be. I don't. I hate to paint always with such a broad brush. I think there got to be a lot of good bankers and got to be bad bankers, just like every other industry. But,
well, yeah, there are some good bankers, but I think with I can't remember her name that. In California, she Facebooked all of her friends, and they, and I think some of the Operation Wall Street people got in it. Take your money out of these big money center banks, put it into a smaller bank or a credit union. I think we need to keep going in that direction.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark, if credit unions can show themselves or do show themselves to be better stewards of capital and to have superior judgment in moving capital from those who have it in excess of their needs to those who need it in excess of what they have, then there it is. You know, I mean, that's the judgment that we have to make as a society. Who do we want to entrust with the right to move capital? And it's a critical function. Great to have you, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Leo.
Okay, Melanie is going to be next on line 6. Welcome, Melanie.
Hi. I just had a suggestion. You know, we've had wonderful participation with Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get another movement going. We really shouldn't have to pay to recycle all these products that are being produced, like from the oil companies, you know, petroleum. Maybe we ought to dump it in their lap. Maybe we ought to return it to them. There used to be a time, I grew up when if you bought soda water in bottles,
yep,
you could return them and, you know, get your deposit. And I know some states do that, but there's a huge lobby for plastics.
Yeah. Melanie, I think all the time how crazy it is. You drink a bottle of wine and why we don't have some system to get the bottle back into the hands of the wine producers.
Yeah.
Where they could reuse the bottle and instead it gets crushed up and I don't know, who knows if you recycle it or it gets landfilled.
Yes.
And I think that this is really where the next installment of the U.S. economy should be going, which
yes,
is an efficient economy. We can grow there.
Exactly.
We don't have to grow more junk and more stuff. We don't have to count on people lining up in droves on Black Friday to buy a bunch of junk shipped yes, to us from the rest of the world. We can clean up our own systems and our own economy, make them more efficient, more energy efficient, more environmentally efficient, and we can grow this economy to the sky.
Yes, but we just need to get that activism going.
We do.
Buy less plastic, buy it in a bottle, and what plastic we are forced to use, send it back to the oil company.
Yep. Melanie, you great. Know. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Great to have you. Okay, about 10 minutes left in the show. Four lines are occupied and a couple of them open. Next up, let's take Matt on line 3. Yes, Matt, welcome.
Two things on the recycling. I really think it's about youth education.
Yep.
Teaching them to sort through, actually teaching them to care.
You're breaking up, Matt. But Matt, you're breaking up. I think you said education is important, and I think that's a major part of it.
Talking to businesses, I know that Starbucks specifically has led multiple ways, and they're actually developing a lot of different ways. They're starting recycling. It's really about reaching out to the bigger businesses and the small businesses.
Yeah, Matt, great. Your connection's not that good. I appreciate your call. Yeah, look, Starbucks, any of these businesses should be looking at how to reduce their footprint. That's where we can grow this economy, and that's where bankers should be lending. And that's what bankers should be demanding. You know, if you're in business and you meet with a banker, I want my bankers to say, before we're willing to fund you, we're concerned that there's risk that you're not going to have a proper recycling and disposal plan for your process. So before we're going to lend to you, we want to see that. You know, why is it that bankers only ask for income? Why? Why can't bankers ask to see other things that are important to our society? Then people would really start to like our bankers better. Next up is Tom on line four. Tom, welcome to the New Capital Show.
How are you doing, Leo? Can you hear me?
I can.
That's good. I'm in the car. I'm enjoying your show. I'm a first-time caller.
Okay, great to have you.
I protested Wall Street back in 2006. I was a founding member of a group called We Are Change. I know it's very, maybe familiar with it. But,
no, tell us about it.
We Are Change?
Well,
yeah. We started out, in about 2005, 2006. We're a grassroots movement, basically independent journalists. We confronted tons of politicians. I mean, you know, Giuliani, Bill Clinton, Bloomberg, Jonathan Edwards. We confronted the Rockefellers. We confronted everybody we can get our hands on, basically, to try to get some truth out of the matter. Anyway, I want to talk about a couple of things. One of the things you said was pretty telling was about the $8 trillion loan that the Federal Reserve is supposed to get, that the Federal Reserve lent out. It's funny, when they lent it out, they didn't tell anybody who they were lending the money to.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody knew, but anyway, it was the best kept secret, but yeah.
Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders, there's a great YouTube video of Bernie Sanders, and he has Bernanke on the stand just trying to get information out of him.
I mean, look, when the Federal Reserve lends out $8 trillion, everyone knows it's going to its member banks. That's where it generally has loaned money and loans money on a regular basis. And it's going to go to our biggest banks, and that's who it went to.
Yeah, so let's talk about this whole debt situation to begin with. You know, first off, I mean, the member banks, we don't even know basically who the stockholders are in the Federal Reserve. I think it's been pretty out in the open pretty much that they're not a government agency.
That's right.
Know? And there's really no government agency to have control over them, so they kind of do what they want with our money.
Yeah, it's a quasi government agency.
You could say quasi. The only thing is that the president appoints the chairman of a group that the Federal Reserve puts forward.
That's right.
And the Federal Reserve employees do not get government checks. They don't get government health insurance. You know, I talked in the first one.
Yeah.
You know,
that's correct.
I want to talk about the debt a little bit. You know, it's funny. I think more than anything else, the American people need a lesson in math. You know, I was watching CNBC, I guess it was about a year ago, and he said between the national debt, I think it was around $14 trillion, credit card debt, student loans, and the mortgages, the country is in $53 trillion worth of debt.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I will put this question out to any of your listeners who may want to call in and answer. Who has $53 trillion to lend us?
The Fed.
No, the Fed doesn't. That's the whole thing.
The Fed can create
money.
Right. The Fed can create it, and
right.
The Fed could create it, and that, of course, is the concern of anyone who owns U.S. debt, is that the debt will be inflated away through the printing of money.
It should be the concern of everybody, because first off, they don't have it. They lend out something they don't have, and they expect the American people to pay it back with interest.
Right.
Now, that should get everybody's dander up, because guess what? You know, Ronald Reagan, when he was in president, I'm not saying I'm a big Ronald Reagan fan. I just been scared of that happened there.
Yep.
He wanted to see where our tax money went, so he formed a commission called the Grace Commission.
Yep.
I guess it was Representative Peter Grace was heading it. And they had their commission. They spent a lot of money to find out where the tax money goes. And what they found out was 100% of what's collected in income tax goes to pay the interest on the debt.
Yep, and getting bigger. Tom, it's great to have you. Thanks for the call.
Leo,
yep.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'll call you
great
again.
To have
you. Guy.
Thanks. Debt's important, and as I've said before, we do need to focus on debt. You need to have the right amount of debt financing in your project and in your society. But I want everybody to, again, focus on the fact that we must have good investment. We must make good assets. If our assets are good and if we use capital and direct it toward great projects, debts will take care of themselves. They will pay off. Equity will rise in value. And our big problem, yes, is that we've taken on a lot of debt. But the biggest problem isn't that we've taken on debt alone. It's that we took on debt and made bad investments with the debt. That's a killer. And that's why we're in the problem that we're in. One more call is going to be Scott to end the day.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, Scott, how come every time I punch the button and you're on, like, you answer so quickly? Like, do you have some sort of super ESP telephone?
I don't know.
You don't know? How does that work?
I don't know. But when you said moving capital, I thought of a more progressive tax structure. But I've heard Republicans argue that if you tax the rich, they will just pass it on to the customer. Now, is that a valid argument? Is it a good argument?
You mean if they tax companies,
yes,
they'll pass it on to their customers?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, any cost that is put on a business, the business is going to have to pass a cost on. Otherwise, it's not going to stay in business because businesses have to meet their costs. And so, you know, look, we've only got 30 seconds left, so I can't get into tax policy.
Yeah, well,
I can't get into tax policy today, okay. but I appreciate your call.
But the company can either make less profits or it can raise prices.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Scott. Okay, that does it. We are there for another edition of the New Capital Show. I want to thank everybody who placed calls today and participated in the show. It's always great to have you. I will be back next week. I hope you have a great week. Oh, Bob Marley. Yeah, great. NewCapitalShow.com. Thanks to Doyle and on Facebook at New Capital Show or at LeoGold.NewCapitalShow. Take care and stay tuned for our news segments, which are coming up starting at 4 o'clock with the KPFT local news and continuing on into the evening. And remember, Wally James will be broadcasting this evening the speech Bill Moyers made here in Houston a couple weeks ago. Hope you will stay tuned for it. Take care.
For many of you, non-commercial radio is priceless. But radio like this is only possible with your financial support. In December, KPFT launches a quiet campaign aimed at reducing on-air fund drive days next year. That's right. Your donation right now buys down the amount of time we spend next year asking for your support during your favorite programs. Is it possible? Can we do this? The campaign at kpft.org kicks off officially next week, but your donation now will help us shave off hours and even days of the fund drive in 2012. Just visit kpft.org right now and stay tuned for updates throughout December. Thank you for your support.
Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM for Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hai Pacifica Toy Kissing Scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發，我哋係侯斯頓嘅 Pacific.